We're going to continue the discussion of deep inelastic scattering. Just want to remind you what we're trying to compute. So we're trying to demonstrate, ultimately, that hadrons are made out of quarks, despite the fact that we can't separate out a free quark from a hadron. So we're using a high-energy probe, namely an electron beam, gliding onto our proton target, which is at rest in the lab frame. And then it shatters into a bunch of hadronic final states, H. And we want to compute the cross-section. And what we're trying to compute is the what's called inclusive cross-section, where we sum over all possible hadronic final states. So here is the formula that we arrived upon last class. This came from just the usual cross-section formula, but we've defined a couple of different tensors. L mu nu was the leptonic tensor, which just came from doing the trace over the lepton part of the diagram. And then there was a bunch of stuff that we couldn't compute because it had to do with a strong interaction, which related to this part of the diagram. And so we lumped together everything we didn't know into this object W mu nu. And so this is something that is a mystery. But we used Lorentz invariance and parity invariance, which is true for the electromagnetic interaction, to restrict the form that W mu nu can take. In particular, we argue that it had to depend on the momentum P, the proton momentum, and the momentum Q, the virtual photon momentum. So we could have the following general form, W mu nu as a function of these two momenta. We wrote it in the following way, some unknown coefficient W1 times eta mu nu, and then plus some other coefficient W2 times P mu, P nu over the proton mass squared. All right, so by Lorentz invariance, it can only, in parity invariance, it can only depend on these two quantities. But the functions W1 and W2 are not constants. They can also depend on the kinematic variables. But because they're Lorentz scalars, they can only depend on other Lorentz scalars. So W1 and W2, depend on the scalar quantities that we've defined before, and so I can write them as a function of, for example, q squared and x, or other combinations as well. All right, so that's where we left off. So now we're going to evaluate this and compute the cross-section. So we're going to work in the lab frame, where the initial proton at rest. And we're going to consider the electron being very relativistic. So I'm going to assume that the relative velocity is around 1, and also that the energy of the electron, both ingoing and outgoing, and also the momentum transfer, is much, much larger than the proton mass. Nu is just EL minus EL prime. So the center of mass energy squared is just equal to S. And so that's P plus L squared. And so that's MP squared plus 2P dot L, the electron mass I'll neglect. And 2P dot L is just 2E times L. Sorry, MP times EL. So this term, by assumption, is much, much larger than this term. Okay, so now let's start by computing L mu nu contracted into W mu nu. So the trace gives us two, so L mu nu gives us two times L mu L prime nu plus L nu L prime mu minus eta mu nu L dot L prime. And then we contract it into W mu nu, which is minus W1 eta nu mu plus P mu E nu over MP squared times W2. All right, so when we multiply everything out, we get 4 times L dot L prime W1 plus W2 times the following, 4 P dot L prime over MP squared minus 2 L dot L prime. Okay. So now what I'll do is I'll relate some of these variables to the kinematic quantities. Capital Q squared is just 2 times L dot L prime. So I have 2 Q squared W1 plus W2. I can write this as 4 EL EL prime minus Q squared. Like so. So when I dot these things together, I just get MP times EL, MP dot EL prime times EL prime. So I just get this, and the MPs cancel. All right. So now I'm going to translate it once again in terms of other kinematic variables. Okay. So I'm going to use the definition of nu and x in terms of Q squared. And so this is 4 MP times nu times x times W1. And I get 4 W2 times 4 EL EL prime minus 2 MP nu X. Okay. So the second term, in parentheses, I can neglect compared to the first term. Because nu, the momentum transfer, is always of order EL is just equal to EL minus EL prime. And those quantities are going to be much, much larger than MP. All right. So the second term, much, much smaller than the first term. Okay, so let's just neglect the second term. All right, so then finally, what I have is 4 MP EL. Can just use y. So nu is just equal to EL times y, using the definitions we derived before, times x times W1. And then I have plus 4 EL squared 1 minus y times W2. OK, so finally, here's what I get. And again, I made the point last class that the matrix element should depend on two kinematic variables that we derived, and so you can see that it does. Here, in this expression here, it depends on x and y. It depends on EL too, but that's one of the initial state variables. Once I fix S, I fixed EL. All right, so now that we've contracted L and W, let's plug it into the formula for the cross-section and compute the total cross-section. So we have the cross-section is 1 over 2 EL, 1 over 4 pi squared, and then I'm left with the energy integral, EL prime squared DEL over 2 EL prime. And then I have d cosine theta, and then times 2 pi e to the fourth over q to the fourth L mu nu W mu nu. Okay, so this is the same formula I had before, just I did the phi integral, and I just expanded a few of the coefficients out. So now what I want to do is translate this integral into an integral over not energy and scattering angle, but in terms of the kinematic variables that we've defined. In particular, I want to translate it into an integral over x and y. So this is what we want to do. All right, so y was equal to 1 minus EL prime over EL. And so this tells us that dy is equal to minus d EL prime over EL. OK, so when I integrate over energy, I'm going to be integrating over y. Now I want to do x. So x was equal to q squared over 2 mp times nu, not q squared. And q squared was equal to 2 EL EL prime 1 minus cosine theta. So now I need to compute what is dx. So dx is just equal to d by cosine theta of x times d cos theta. And so this is equal to, when you plug everything in, just taking the derivative of this with respect to cosine theta, what you get is EL prime over MP nu d cos theta. Or d cos theta is equal to mp nu over el prime dx. OK, so now what I wanted to integrate, so on the top line there, one of the el primes cancels out. So the measure that I'm left with is el prime d EL prime d cosine theta. And plugging in, I have that this is equal to MP times nu times dx dy. Nu, of course, is also related to y. Hopefully I didn't make a mistake, yeah?
W1 and W2 are functions of anything that's a Lorentz scalar.
Yeah.
Why are we assuming that they're constant in terms of this integral, that you can just pull them out?
Oh, no, they are underneath the integral. So W mu nu is under the integral. So I'm going to be integrating over these variables.
Okay.
Yeah, so I wrote it here as a function of, it's on the board underneath, as a function of q squared and x. But you could also written as a function of x and y. They're all equivalent to one another. Any two variables, yeah?
Don't you have to vary x also with the prime? With
the EL prime? Yeah, right. So in principle, yes. So you imagine computing the Jacobian as the determinant of some matrix. And the other component will be 0. So I don't need to worry about that, because the derivative of y with respect to cosine theta is 0. So when I compute the Jacobian, that term that you're thinking of won't enter. OK. All right, so now let me take this and plug in. So I have left over 1 over 8 pi EL integral dx dy e to the 4th over q to the 4th. Okay, and then in parentheses, I've got 4 mp squared EL y times x times nu times W1 plus 4 EL squared 1 minus y w2 times mp times nu. All right. So I'm just going to reorganize the terms a little bit. This whole thing is equal to the integral over dx dy. And then I'm just going to relate E squared to 4 pi times alpha electromagnetic, the fine structure constant. So this is 2 pi alpha squared over q to the fourth. And then in parentheses, I have S times xy squared times 2 mp times w1. And then plus 2 times s times 1 minus y times nu times w2, like this. Okay, so expanding all the terms out and using definitions that we've derived before, you can arrive at this form here. And the reason I put these two expressions in parentheses is because people have defined yet another two functions to encapsulate the effect of this interaction. And so people call this one F1 with a superscript E to denote that it comes from an electron or electromagnetic probe. And this one goes in the name of F2, E. Okay? So it's just a different definition. So here are the new functions. F1e, and it's also a function of x and q squared, is 2 times mp times w1. And f2 of e, function of x and q squared, is nu w2 x and q squared. OK. So all right. We have to define new functions. Got to follow convention. So now here's the end result. Two pi alpha squared times s over q to the fourth. And then I have f one e x q squared times x y squared plus 2f2e as a function of x and q squared, 1 minus y. Or we could have written the differential cross section, which, OK, we just bring the dx and dy over here. We get d squared sigma over dx dy is 2 pi alpha squared times s over q to the fourth, and then it's just everything in parentheses. Okay, so this is the end result. And we've gone through this long argument and a lot of algebra, and the main point is just that this process, deep inelastic scattering, depends on two functions, which themselves each depend on two variables. That's really the only thing we wanted to show. Yeah?
Why only these two variables?
Why? Ah. So the reason is that what else can you construct? Anything else you can construct can always be expressed in terms of these two variables. We've written it as x and q squared, but we could have written it in terms of x and y, because y is not independent once you fix x and q squared. All right, so we have two independent variables and two unknown functions. Right, so so both of these functions can be measured experimentally by doing this and measuring the differential cross-section. How do you disentangle the two functions, right? If you're only measuring one differential cross-section, how do you measure independently the two functions? Well, you can due to the fact that they depend on y in a very different way. So y, remember, is the fractional energy transfer. And so if you look at events, scattering events, where the fractional energy transfer is small, then you've suppressed the F1 term relative to the F2 term. So in those events, you're measuring F2. If you measure events where the fractional energy transfer approaches 1, you're measuring F1, and you're suppressing F2. And so by looking at different kinematic regimes, you can extract the two unknown functions, F1 and F2, from just a single type of scattering. OK. So now we're going to go back to our understanding that the proton is made out of quarks. And we're going to compute exactly the same process under the assumption that we have quarks in our proton. And we want to come back to this idea of factorization. So the assumption of factorization, well, it's not really an assumption. It emerges as a fact of the beta function of QCD, which is large at large distances and small at small distances. Factorization tells us that what happens at large distances, or I should say what happens at small distances, is not affected by what happens at large distances. So we can think of the cross-section, or the scattering event, as factorizing into three steps, or as into a product of three terms. So here's what I want to compute. So this would be the exclusive scattering cross-section, where I'm specifying a given final state H. I should think of it as factorizing into three stages. First, I need to specify what the initial state of the quark is. So given a proton p, what's the probability for finding a quark with a given momentum? You have a question?
And what scale are we looking at in terms of which you say large distances and small distances?
Yeah, so the scale associated with hadronization will be of order lambda QCD, around 200 MeV. And so what we're assuming is that our electron probe is coming in with energies much, much greater than that. And also, the energy transfer is also much, much greater than that. So the quark inside the proton is getting a kick, which is much larger than lambda QCD. So you can think of that kick as happening over a very small time scale and very short distance scale. All right, so the first thing you need to figure out is what's the probability, which I'll write like this, of finding a quark Q with momentum P inside the proton. So this will be probability. So here, Q is supposed to denote the flavor of the quark. So it could be up or down, or it could be a different flavor as well if it's a C quark with momentum P. And this p is supposed to be a little p in contrast to the total momentum of the proton, which is the big P. And this is large distance physics. So this is the part that concerns what is the initial wave function of quarks inside of the proton. All right, so then we need to compute, multiply this by the scattering cross-section, which is eq goes to eq. And so this is the cross-section for scattering an electron off of Q with momentum P. And I put a hat over the cross-section to denote the fact that it's a cross-section concerning quarks, or the constituents of the proton. And then once the quark scatters, it gets a kick, then it's kicked out of the proton, and then eventually the final state will hadronize. So then I need to multiply it by the probability for forming a hadronic state H, given a quark that gets a kick with a certain momentum. Okay, so this is the idea of factorization, that I can just multiply the probabilities for all of these three things, and I don't need to worry about anything else. Then what I want to do, of course, is I want to sum or integrate over all possible quark momenta, p and flavor, q. So I should write the following, where the sum over momentum p should really be thought of as an integral. Okay, so the first thing that we don't know, yeah?
Don't you need the restriction in the second factor in the sense that you can't go, like your end state can't just be a bunch of quarks and gluons with arbitrary momenta, because they have to form bound states?
That's not the restriction that you need to worry about. So no matter what you produce in the final state, it automatically will form some combination of bound states. Quarks can't exist otherwise.
Yeah, so that's my point. That's the only thing that you can end up with. So you should only look at those.
Exactly. So as long as you produce objects that are neutral under color in the final state, then automatically you'll form combinations of hadrons in the final state. There's no way to kick out a quark in such a way that the final state will not form hadrons.
You don't just need a particular combination of quarks to make it neutral. Like, I can't just have an up quark there and an anti-up there, and that doesn't form a hadron. The proton is only that big.
Yeah, so what happens is if they get separated too far, you pull out more QQ bar pairs out of the vacuum,
yes,
and those will form together hadrons.
Okay, so that's physically what will happen, but how does that...
Yeah, so that's lumped together with this object, which is the probability of forming a given hadronic final state H out of whatever momentum my quark gets kicked out from the proton at. So whatever happens in the final state to hadronize our final states is given by this probability of H.
So whatever evolution you use with the standard model Lagrangian will only give you bound states.
Yeah.
Because it's not really a bound state at any moment of time, is it?
It depends on what...
It's not even really an up quark or a down quark at every moment in time.
It depends what you mean by moment in time. So if moment in time is a time scale that's long compared to the inverse of lambda QCD, then, of course, you do have color-neutral bound states. But if you're only looking at very, very short time scales, then you can think of quarks. You don't need to worry about quarks being inside of color-neutral objects. You can think of them as free quarks. This is the idea of factorization, in fact. Okay. All right, so... I forgot to write something on this board here. But let me skip it. So this probability of forming a given hadronic state H given an outgoing quark that gets kicked out with momentum let's say little p prime, is given by this factor here. And in general, we don't know how to compute it. Depends on the details of hadronization, which is a challenging problem. So what we're going to do is we're going to consider the inclusive process, where instead of calculating to a given final state, we're just going to sum over all of the hadronic final states. So what we have here is that E P to E X, which is was the sum, over H. When I write it in this factorized form, you can see what we have. We still have the sum over Q and P, probability of finding quark Q momentum little p times the cross-section for scattering off of that quark. But now we want to sum over all of the hadronic final states. And so I should write this as a sum over the probability to hadronize this final state here into the combination of hadrons H. But the only thing that we do know is that due to confinement, you're guaranteed to hadronize. So the total probability to hadronize is equal to 1. So I don't need to worry about this factor at all. It's just equal to 1 by confinement. So the only things I need to compute to be able to calculate this cross-section in the standard model is I need to compute this cross-section for scattering off of individual quarks. And then I need to compute the initial probability of finding an initial state quark with a given momentum p. So this, of course, is the thing that we're going to compute. And this is the part that, in principle, you can't compute and needs to be measured experimentally. But once you measure these things, you don't need to do anything else, because it's just known. Just to complete it, here is what we're going to compute. Okay, so this this setup is known as what's called the Parton model. Parton model just means that you're scattering off of the constituents inside of the proton. Yeah?
So the second factor is basically the cross-section to go from the constituents to the constituents of a proton with certain momenta to the constituents of a hadron or a bunch of hadrons.
No, no. So the second factor, the scattering rate, or this cross-section.
From what to what?
Is just a scattering cross-section for an electron scattering off of a quark with a given momentum p into an electron with a quark with a given momentum p prime.
Into which quark?
Well, it has to scatter into the same quark.
So
are you talking about which quark?
Where is the transition to where does the actual hadronization happen?
Yeah, OK. So I can sketch a cartoon. I'm not sure if this will answer the question, but.
I mean, so you're saying that that's elastic scattering?
Yeah.
So where does the inelastic scattering happen in the probability of H?
Yeah, that's the inelastic part. So here's the electron part. And so here's the proton going along, and then the scattering event happens here. And so I should think of this as one of the quarks inside of the proton with a given momentum p will scatter.
Yes.
And it has to scatter elastically. Of course, it's just a QED-like interaction. And so then it gets spit off with a momentum p prime. And so the rest of the proton will recoil against it. So now I've got a quark going outer here, and sorry, I've just not three, but two. This is just a cartoon. Two quarks going over here, they want to form color-neutral objects. And so what happens is they pull out QQ bar pairs from the vacuum. And so so we might have gluon interactions, which could pull out QQ bar pairs. So this will be, let's say, an up quark. But it might be other gluon interactions occurring as well. So this might be some other baryon. This might be a meson, and like so. So this is the cartoon sketch of what's going on.
So the, like the actual standard model stuff, which is not QED, we're not considering.
No, we're considering the strong interaction, but we're only considering the aspect of the fact that it leads to this feature of confinement.
Not really. Like, all of the strong interaction is in that probability of age, in what happens after the elastic scattering.
So
what you're actually describing is the elastic scattering.
Yeah, so, but that's the feature of the strong interaction we're using, that the strong interaction confines. We don't need to consider the interactions of gluons.
Well, in practice, if you want to calculate any cross-section other than just it interacts in any way, you do need that probability of age.
No, you don't. We're computing
like in,
something.
In practice, wouldn't I be interested in knowing whether, I don't know, if I smash an electron on a proton, whether I can create a Higgs or something? I don't know.
Ah, yes. That is an interesting thing. Yes, great. But for that, you don't need the interactions of gluons, per se, because interactions that are of interest in colliders are really only going to be entering at short distances. Those will also satisfy this principle of factorization.
Sure, but the Higgs is not going to be going to come into play by looking at QED and elastic scattering.
Yeah, it comes in through other types of interactions.
So
yeah.
You need inelastic scattering.
No, you don't. You don't. We'll actually compute the production cross-section of the Higgs boson. Probably next week. So
you
maybe we can postpone
particles with elastic scattering. That's exactly what elastic scattering means, that you don't create new particles. It's just
no, okay.
Bouncing off each other.
We're getting kind of lost in semantics. Let's continue on.
Okay, then.
Let me not call it inelastic versus elastic. What we're distinguishing is short distance versus large distance. The processes that you're interested in are all short distance physics, and so you can go through exactly the same factorization arguments that I'm going to do here. Here, we're only looking at the simplest case, which is just a QED interaction. So maybe you think this is too boring. Okay, but let's do this first case. So this setup is, as I mentioned, called the parton model. Parton model just means constituents. Just means that we're looking at scattering of our probe, which here is the virtual photon, off of the individual constituents in the proton. The constituents can be quarks, but you can also have antiquarks, because at a given moment in time, the proton itself can fluctuate into existence quark-antiquark pairs. And so we can scatter off of those virtual antiquarks, known as C-quarks, SEA quarks. We can also scatter off of gluons in principle. Gluons are also partons in the proton, but here we're not going to be scattering off of gluons because our probe is the photon, and the photon doesn't interact with gluons. So we only need to consider quarks and also antiquarks as well. The other little bit of notation which I introduced is that when you put a hat on something like the cross-section, that denotes a parton-level cross-section. So it's the cross-section for scattering off of partons. This object here, sigma hat, we can compute. So it's the sigma hat. And I just want to mention that we're going to assume that the quarks are massless. And so here's the process that we need to worry about. Electron momentum L, L prime, Q. And then we have, so this is the photon. And then we have our initial quark Q, hopefully not too confusing in terms of notation. Momentum little p gets scattered to a final state quark Q with momentum p prime. All right, so this is the object we want to compute. Straightforward to write down what the matrix element is. Just in QED, we know what the Feynman rules are, i.e. gamma mu UL I over Q squared U bar P prime minus IE QQ gamma mu U of P. Okay, so this just follows from the usual Feynman rules of QED. And when we square the matrix element, we can square the matrix element. So what we want to compute is 1/4 sum over spins times the matrix element squared. And okay, so let me just do one of the intermediate steps. 1/4 q to the fourth over q, e to the fourth over q to the fourth, the charge of the given quark squared times the trace of L slash gamma mu L prime slash gamma nu. Then we have the trace of Q slash gamma mu. Oops, should have been a little P. P slash gamma mu. P prime slash gamma nu. And we can multiply all this out. It's 4 e to the fourth over Q to the fourth times L dot P, L prime dot P prime. Plus L dot P prime, L prime dot P. Now we can express this in terms of Mandelstam variables, which is useful. So the Mandelstam variables are the usual S, T, and U, but we need to distinguish these Mandelstam variables from the Mandelstam variables corresponding to the whole greater interaction for scattering off of the proton itself. These will be the Mandelstam variables only for this one microscopic interaction. So of course, we want to put a hat on them to denote that these are the parton level Mandelstam variables. So this is little p plus L squared, or little p prime plus L prime squared. This is L minus L prime squared, or P minus P prime squared. And this is L minus P squared, or L prime minus P prime squared. Okay. And so since I'm neglecting all of the masses here, the quark and the electron masses, these objects are just 2 times P dot L, or 2 P prime dot L prime. This one is just equal to q squared. It's the same q squared as what we had before, because of course it's the same L and L prime as what we had before. And this object here is 2 L dot P, or 2 L prime dot P prime, with a minus sign. And then if we add them together, you can check that it's equal to 0, because we're neglecting the masses. So now the sum over the matrix element squared takes the following relatively simple form. Two e to the fourth charge of the quark squared over t hat squared times s hat squared plus u hat squared. So there we go.
Q squared is equal to 0?
This is interesting. Q squared. Not equal to 0.
But it's not 0. Then you
oh, it's not 0. Hopefully it's 0. I think it should be 0.
You literally have...
Oh, yeah, these two things. You're just adding these two things. Yeah, I see the problem. Let's see. Maybe I wrote down incorrectly the definition.
There's also a square missing.
Yeah, I forgot something. This should be a prime, and this should be prime and no prime. So it should be this and this.
There's also a square missing.
Square missing. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Great. Okay, hopefully this gives you 0. Okay, you can check. Not sure. I'm nervous now. All right, so okay, so now we can plug in the matrix element squared and compute the cross section. So we have EQ goes to EQ. And so this is 1 over 2 EL 2 EP times V rel. And then we have D3L prime over 2 pi cubed, 1 over 2 EL prime, D3P prime over 2 the pi cubed, 1 over 2 EP prime, energy momentum conservation, and then we have times 1/4 sum over the matrix element squared. Okay, so if you do the P prime integral, here's what you get. Let's see. So I'm going to use the fact that, so in the center of mass frame, right, so we're going to work in the center of mass frame. And since the initial states are relativistic, we can take that the relative velocity is around equal to 1. And when I have this combination, oh, sorry, 2, I should say. And this combination here is just ends up being to s hat, okay, 4 times the center mass energy squared. Also, when I have 2 EL prime and 2 EP prime, that's also equal to S hat. So that's also the center of mass energy squared. So I've got 1 over 2 S hat squared. Now I can do the D3P prime integral using the momentum part of the delta function. And I'm still left with a 2 pi. So let me just write the L part. No longer there. I have 2 pi. And then the energy part of the delta function, which is the square root of s hat minus 2 EL prime times 1/4 sum over the matrix element squared. So now I can do the phi part of the integral. Just gives me a factor of 2 pi. And I can also do the energy part of this integral using the delta function here. And it's straightforward to do. So here's what we get. So I've got 1 over 4 pi s hat squared, 1 half, and then I have the square root of s hat over 2 squared. Then I'm left with the d cosine theta integral. And then I have 1 fourth sum over spins times the matrix element squared. OK, so I'm skipping some of the steps here. But when you do those two integrals, here's what you get. It's pretty straightforward to do. So now I can write down what is the differential cross-section. Here's the differential cross section. D sigma hat by d cos theta is 1 over 32 pi s hat times 2 e to the fourth qq squared over t hat squared times s hat squared plus u hat squared. Let me write this in terms of alpha. This is pi times alpha squared qq squared over s hat t hat squared s hat squared plus u hat squared. Okay, so let's see where we're going. Okay. So it's useful to write this cross-section in the following way. So what I'm going to compute is d sigma hat by d t hat. So we're just going to do a little change of variables. So this is d sigma hat d cosine theta times d t hat, d cosine theta over d t hat. And so all I need to know is this quantity here. So t hat is l prime minus l, or l minus l prime squared, which is minus 2 e l squared minus 1 minus cosine theta. So d t hat over d cosine theta is just 2 EL, sorry, this should be EL prime. 2 EL, EL prime, D, just this. Yeah. I think that's right. So then, right, so in the center of mass frame, EL is equal to EL prime, and that's just equal to the square root of s hat over 2. All right? And so now I can plug this in. This is just s hat divided by 2. So now this whole cross section is 2 pi alpha squared qq squared over s hat squared t hat squared times s hat squared plus u hat squared. OK, so that's the final expression for this cross-section that we're going to use. Let's see how much time we have left. I guess we should probably stop there for now. So what we're going to do next time, tomorrow, is we're going to take this cross-section, and we're going to plug it into this formula here to show how you go from the parton level cross section to the full cross section for scattering off of hadrons. OK, that's what we'll do tomorrow.